Good morning on Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to episode 76 of the BrianMadden.com podcast. I'm in San Francisco, my home. Jack is joining us from the studio in San Francisco. Hello, Jack.
Hello.
And Gabe is joining us from his home in Omaha, Nebraska. How are you, Gabe?
Not bad. I'm literally looking at a river of water through my backyard. It's been raining for 24 hours straight now.
I was going to say,
and
you don't
there
have a
is a stream in the backyard. And it carries over to the neighbor's backyard, and it actually has current. Like, I'm watching one of those little tykes, plastic teeter-totters things in the neighbor's yard, and I think it might float away.
You need to get a remote control boat to, like, drive around.
I have one, and that is not a bad plan.
Yeah. Podcast over. So
Lizzie said that she has to go to school. My daughter said that she has to go to school because she saw this giant puddle, which probably goes up halfway up her shins, and she was sad that she couldn't go jump around in it and that she had to go to school. So, like, her second day of preschool, and she's already like, school sucks. I'd rather stay home and play.
Yeah. Oh, man. And she's a smart one, too. Your son didn't make it through 10 minutes.
Yeah, notice I'm not disagreeing with you.
Well, it's crazy because we have so much going on in our industry right now. And, you know, with the Citrix shakeup and Elliott, and we just came off of Brianform, we got VMworld coming up. There's all this talk about, you know, my article on the future of VMware kind of like competing against Citrix. Gabe, I don't know, there's been a lot of good stuff. But the topic on our minds is the weather in San Francisco, that it's actually like warm here and I don't like it.
Isn't it always hot at VMworld?
Yeah. I mean, we're not used to 80s. I'll just say it like that. So, but today's actually cooled down. So I feel like I can actually be productive again.
When I'm 80 years old, I'll have two memories of VMworld, and that is empty city and hotter than hell.
So, okay, let me tell you. So, here's my like heat weather like slash geek story. So, so no one has air conditioning in San Francisco because it's, I mean, this,
see, go to the movies.
Before today, I've been here 7 years now. Before today, there was maybe, or before this past kind of heat wave, there was maybe two or three days ever that I wished I had air conditioning. It's just not that hot here. And there's not usually a lot of bugs, and so like you can open up below windows and it's fine. But this weekend was so hot, and I was, you know, trying to go to sleep, and like my girlfriend was with me, so we were laying on the bed, like just shimmering, you know, like no sheets, all the windows open, and she's like, "You need a fan." I'm like, "I'm aware. It's 12:30 a.m. We're hot." And she's like, "You don't have any fans in this house." And I'm like, "I got a fan." So I went to, I used to keep a computer up in the attic that powers himself in my house, and I had it in a Rubbermaid bin that had a USB powered cooling fan. It was like a regular cooling fan from a computer case, but it was pretty decent. It was like 6 inches. And so I fished this thing out because I had just pulled it out of the computer or out of the attic recently. And then I needed USB power. So I have one of those USB like batteries that I use for my laptop when I travel. The HyperMac batteries. That's got USB on it. So I could plug that in for power and then plug that thing into the wall. And then I used, electrical tape and like taped like around the fan to sort of like mount it to this battery. Cause the battery is heavy, you know? And then I could put this thing on the bed and put it like, you know, a foot from her face. So there's a little like battery powered, you know, USB 6-inch computer fan. I'll tell you what, it worked well.
So, I like the differences between you and I, because last night I spent a lot of time looking up a 56-inch industrial steel fan to hang in the garage. So we go from little 6-inch USB-powered fan.
Yeah, this measures in cubic inches per minute, not of air movement, I think, not cubic feet per minute.
Right.
So anyway, but yeah, like what? So we have Bri for him. The videos are all done, you know, like they're posted, and I have not started watching the videos from Brianform yet, but I feel like, to sort of summarize Brianform, the big thing for me was like for some reason at last Brianforms there seemed to be like just tons and tons of storage vendors there, and there weren't really a lot of storage vendors, if any. I mean, it just wasn't sort of that storage focused, and I don't know if maybe now, you know, all the storage vendors, like, I'm going to get in trouble for this, but, like, they're kind of all the same-ish, you know? Like, yeah, some sell you hardware, some sell you software, but, like, you know, they can all do fully persistent VDI with like lots of IOPS, and you know, it's just like pick your flavor. So it's like all like the storage wars are kind of like, yeah, like all the vendors do all the features now. You know,
pick. Well, yeah, it's a commodity. I mean, it's just. And I wrote about that a long time ago. Like when people like Liquidware Labs get into storage.
When Liquidware Labs gets into anything, you know that.
That's not a bad thing. I'm just saying.
Your
like,
stuff's
you got
not that complex anymore. My God. Sorry, guys.
Liquidware Labs is in storage?
Yeah, they have some storage optimization software. Now, again, like they all do different things and they all work in different ways. But there's something for everybody now. And they all make your VDI storage better. And so, you know, your challenge is just going to be to find the one that works for you in like that solves the problem that you have, because your problem is not the same one as your buddy has at the other company. You know, so there's 50 different companies. There's 8 different ways of doing things. And so your job's to find the way and the company that does it at the right price.
So what are we going to talk about on the show floor at VMworld? Because I feel like you know, VMworld, obviously, one of the big things that we talk about VMworld is that there are only really like 10%, maybe 20% of the vendors at there really apply to us in the end user computing space. And, you know, most everything else, it's cloud, blah, 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 cloud automation, whatever, cloud.
I think there we're going to see plenty of storage. I mean, so we could go and try to suss out the differences between them all. But
oh, I don't want to. That's
I don't want to do that.
So, that's what I was going to say. Like, those 20% that matter to us, like 15% are storage. And so if it's like, storage.
Oh, I got what you're saying. Yeah.
There are lots of different ways to do it.
It'll make it easier for us then, because there'll be like 3 vendors we care about.
Yeah, so VMworld, what do we care about? Actually,
hang on. So this is kind of level jumping a little bit, because I want to get into VMworld, but on Briveform, I'm going to ask you guys. So like the thing for Briveform for me was, you know, what was there to replace storage, sort of, was all these like mobile-ish type vendors. And
right,
so
VMI and app refactoring and
yeah, and which one is it, by the way? There's app refactoring and app transformation, and one of the terms we're supposed to use and one we're not supposed to use, and I forget which is which.
Well, I think app refactoring was Gartner's term for it, and that's the one that I mean, we latched onto that just because that was the term for it, and the vendors don't like it. They want to call it app transformation. But, you know, I like refactoring. You're literally changing the form factor that an application is. And transforming sounds like what everybody else does.
Your app, you're literally. I like refactoring because you are literally transforming the factor of the app.
You're changing the factor. Yeah, transforming. I didn't say transforming, did I?
Check the tape.
Damn. Transformation, like that's in every single company's marketing literature. So like refactoring seems more specific to me. So I prefer that, but whatever.
So, but I'm curious about this. So there's a lot going on there. You know, this to me, and I don't want to get too far. We've beat this topic to death, but I do believe that this is a big hole in the industry today, because Citrix VMware are good at, you know, delivering your Windows desktops and applications, they're good at delivering your Windows profiles. They're good at managing your mobile devices. I'm using the word devices specifically there, because even EMM, MAM, MDM, like it's all still kind of very device centric. I mean, even if it's, you're applying profiles to people, they're about mobile device. You know, it's only things you're doing on mobile devices, at least at this point. But there's a middle ground of like, you know, apps that can sort of work anywhere, and like look at what Office 365 does. But of course, Apple or Microsoft spent like, you know, like $1 billion writing that. So how do we like Office 365 FI, you know, all the middle applications? And I think that's like Citrix and Microsoft and VMware are not making moves in the space, and it's probably a few years before these like have like real revenue tied to these kinds of products, and people are actually doing big stuff with it. But I kind of feel like this is something.
Yes, it answers that next big question of, we know we have to do something about mobile. We know what EMM is now. What else do we need to do?
Yeah. So I don't know, thoughts on Briveform. Like, what do you guys? I mean, like I said, I've got to just digest everything that we talked about in the 50 whatever sessions we had.
So yes, I'd say, yes, app refactoring is a thing. And with the three or four app refactoring vendors there, I feel like it's the because there are like many, many different ways to answer that question of like, when, as we're going mobile, where do all of our apps come from? And app refactoring is the like the one corner of that that most directly relates to desktop virtualization. So it's like the best adjacent area to be there at Briform. So that totally makes sense. That's just like one, I don't want to say the corner of the tip of the iceberg. It's more like the corner of the iceberg because there are, you know, lots of different areas of it. And of course for, you know, on my side, the other big thing at Briform was VMI. We had three VMI vendors there, and gosh, we've been, you know, we've been talking and writing about it a lot recently. Really is because Gabe and I both took parts of our presentation and made them into article forms, and I've actually got some more coming up that I'll spread it out over the next month or so to not completely overload people on VMI.
But, which is code word for stretching one topic into 4 weeks of articles.
but we don't want to saturate the audience though, too, because the biggest memory I will have from that session for years to come was that, you know, Jack's the EMM guy. Jack's talking about this stuff from that perspective, and I'm like the salty old veteran desktop guy. And the very first thing that comes out of my mouth is, when I first heard about VMI, I thought, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And half the audience looked like a bobblehead. They're nodding their head. And that's my half of the audience.
Them my peeps.
But, and the other half was Jack's half that are shaking their heads the other way. But
yeah, you know, and so if you look at the article that I published last Friday, you know, it's what are the right use cases for VMI. There's a lot of important nuanced discussions to be had there, and you know, I think we are in a good place because we wrote the VDI delusion 3 and a half years ago, and I feel like we learned a lot of lessons from that. We've learned a lot of lessons from the last 5 years of the evolution of the EMM industry. So I think we'll be able to see this being applied in a good way, and we don't have to worry about writing the VMI delusion in a couple of years.
Oh, right, because we know better, like this time around, sort of.
Yeah, because I
think there is no delusion.
Mobile isn't a big surprise like it used to be. Yeah. You know, I've been saying this for like, I don't know, at least a year or two now. Like 5 years ago or whatever, mobile came along, consumerization came along, all that took us by surprise. But like that can't happen again because we were like already caught off guard once and all this stuff came along and
quote, that can't happen again because we know better this time. Jack Madden, August 18th, 2015. Start the clock for those words being eaten.
Well, so
that's
so,
like, oh, here it is. Here's the problem. That's like my golf swing when I like shank it and I'm like, oh, you know, I broke my elbow. Like,
if I just never look up again.
Yeah. Like, oh, here's the problem. This next one's going 360 yards.
Well, no. Okay. Laugh at me all you want, but let me explain what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because it's more like it's like cracking an egg. That egg was the like Windows only, desktop only world, and once all that other stuff happened, like you're not gluing that egg back together again.
Yeah. Okay.
I should probably be more careful about explaining with my metaphors, but
well, yeah. I see what you're saying. Once this
idea that, you know, the desktop is just a Windows desktop, once that's broken apart, like there's not gonna be a point like 5 years from now where say it's like, oh, absolutely everything that we do is within like iOS now, so we can completely ignore everything else. Like that that.
You know what would be great is if we like bundled up all of our applications into one monolithic stack, complete with the user profile.
And then users can access from anywhere.
That's not going to happen again.
It happened twice already.
Let me ask you this. We need optimists, by the way, in what we do. And I've talked a lot about how like I've turned the corner in the past year to 2 years on like I do not get excited about new technology like I used to. Like I had to buy a new desktop computer recently, and notice how I said that I had to buy a new desktop computer. I didn't want to buy a new desktop. Like it wasn't like excited and I'm like on Amazon, whatever. And that computer was delivered to me 2 weeks ago. It's still sitting in the box. I haven't cracked it open yet. I've been using just my laptop. Because I got to set it up again and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
You don't
and
care about that new computer smell?
Right, yeah. Like, guess what? It runs all my old apps, but it doesn't, smell like, take ozone. 3 seconds to to switch between apps. Yeah. So Jack, you're good balance. I was out last night, actually, someone was talking about the balance that the three of us have, where I'm sort of the, like, my hair is on fire screamer. Gabe is just like,
I'm so far to the middle.
The sysadmin just like doing his, like, because he's writing as a sysadmin, writing to sysadmins, like, just kind of like that. And then Jack is the one who's sort of doing like the, like thoughtful analytics about what this could mean, and you know, like I think this can all work, guys. Like the sort of optimist, like Jack being, we say younger, but you're over 30 now, and you know, you're 4 years in the MDM space or EMM space, which is probably as much as anyone on the planet.
The entirety
so.
Of the EMM space.
But all right. So anyway, okay. it's a good balance. So like your optimism is necessary for this whole triangle to keep working. So thank you for that, Jack.
You're welcome.
Let me ask a new topic. And this is, I don't know the answer to this, and so I'm asking you two guys, because Gabe, you did that article, I don't know, last week about like BlueStacks and, you know, Android apps on Windows Server and like use, like, so deploying those, like, could that be like a homebrewed VMI? And I don't want to talk about that, but what I want to talk about is, so Windows 10, like Windows 10 universal, like there's talk about Windows 10 apps being able to run on like everything runs Windows, and the Windows 10 phone OS or whatever it's called is like the same as Windows 10 like desktop OS or whatever. And if you have like new style apps, I guess like it's literally the same app that runs on them. And I'm curious about what that means, because now there's also talk about like the Xbox eventually going to Windows 10 or running Windows or whatever, and then like the same app can kind of run anywhere. I'm asking this question like out of ignorance. Like I do not. Well, here's the first question. Like the first part of the question is like, what does that mean? Is that real? Like, is that a thing? I think Windows 10 Phone is not out yet, but like, is it really the same app, or is it the same code? You compile it for different platforms, or is it like literally the same like MSI or whatever you put on your laptop goes on your phone? And secondly,
well, so the, these
sorry,
days.
Sorry, real quick. The second question is, if that's the case, is it? There's like different UIs packaged up into it, and then could I run a Windows 10 like Office on my, you know, RDSH server, but then when I connect to it from an iPad, it like the same Office, you know, WinRAR.exe is running, but it just knows I've got a smaller screen, and like it just converts itself to touch mode for tiny screen, and then I reconnect from a desktop and it converts back. Like, am I barking up the right tree at all, or is just like, am I massively misinformed?
Well, so there's native Office for iPad now. So,
okay, Office is a bad example, but like,
right, and
just a universal app in general, and then combined with the continuity stuff. I think that's the idea, but I don't know if the RDSH component is built into that or not.
And yeah. So there are a few different questions in there. There are two different ideas that, the same app package can be used for all devices, and it can be, you can have like the keyboard the keyboard and mouse interface and run that off of your phone connected, connected to everything. But like the question is, with all this transformation and like whatever extra work it takes to make an app work across all the different platforms and the devices, the big question is still like, who's going to do that?
Well, yeah. So that's a good question too. So we've taken a couple questions and added a third one in, which like,
I think that's the most important one.
Yeah. So let me ask you, like, these assumptions, like, is it, so we always talked about how, like new style Windows apps, starting with Windows, was it Windows 8 that introduced, or Windows? Yeah. Windows 8, I think, right? Introduced, like the apps that are like the Tile World apps, yeah. They're called Windows Store apps, where they're full screen, and you know, now Windows 10, you can like have them like actually in Windows and side by side, but they're like they're more like App Store type apps, right? Where yeah. There's very limited APIs that you can use, and so the big problem is we always talk about is like you can't just take your existing Windows app that's been around for 20 years and just push a button and make it into one of these things, because all the sets of APIs and everything you use are different, and like even Office isn't that now, right? So
to do that, you have to use Project Centennial, and which, of course, from Tim Mangan's blog post from a couple months ago, Project Centennial is, you know, there are certainly contingencies and questions yet to be answered. So,
but now when that happens, is it literally that same app is going to run on your phone and on your desktop?
That's my impression, but yeah, I can't answer that entirely.
But
it kind of goes back. Yeah, I mean, it seems like everybody, including Microsoft, is taking a wait and see approach.
Because Office is like, I mean, apps are huge. Like desktop apps are like gigabytes in size, you know. And so like all that goes on your phone now. Like, I'm so ignorant here, but
I don't know. I think it's more convertible, 2-in-1 laptop type.
And,
I don't know if it's going on the phone.
The big problem is that, it's small in phone size, but just making an app small in phone size does not make it a good mobile app. Like, how do you know which buttons you want to appear when it's like 5 inches, as opposed to when it's full tablet size or full screen size?
That's kind of my question.
And, like, if only there was a thing that could refactor applications.
and you could make decisions about like which. You know, which buttons you want for different users.
But now for me, not as a Windows application developer, I'm just piling ignorance on ignorance. Like, I assume that when you build like a giant Windows app, you know, it's a million little pieces and modules, and like there is like a UI piece. And so if you're building one of these universal apps, maybe you build like two kind of like UI pieces or multiple UI pieces, one for four to 6-inch devices, one for 6 to 10. And then one for like that has keyboard and mouse, and so it's like the same app running behind the scenes, and then it's just like turns on a different UI depending on. So like the app creator is to some extent building different UIs for different form factors, because like it's gonna have to be like if they're talking about one app that runs on phones and computers and your TV set, it's gotta have like
UI packages. Hey, look, Tim's in the chat room,
but regardless, like I'm inclined to not like spend too much energy sweating all of this.
All right, so that's
like
Jack. We change roles here. I'm like, wait, this could be all, like this is co- like this is the future. Is this what's going on?
Just what you got done, yeah.
And then Jack's like,
I was like, well, why are you talking about that? I want to talk about VMworld.
All right. Centennial just makes full rich apps deliverable to Windows desktop laptops OS only. Okay. So that's not no two different projects for that. Tim, thank you so much. We need to have you on as a guest.
Again. I think we had him on earlier.
Tim can be on monthly. So we're signing up for this.
Yeah.
What are you doing next Tuesday, Tim?
Tim, just Skype in right now.
all right. So let's talk about VMworld. Jack, talk about VMworld.
Okay, so well, my big question for you, you know, in a second we can get to your article about VMware, about Horizon and Zen App and Zen Desktop being neck and neck, by 2016. And so it can ask you like the big question, like, what do you mean by neck and neck? But first, I'm going to assume the question that you are going to ask me about VMworld is like, what's going on the mobile side? And of course, the answer is, you know, kind of like last year, remember, was the first VMworld after the AirWatch acquisition, which, wow, it seems like that was forever ago. But last year's, it was just like January 2014. So which, 18 months. But anyway, last year at VMworld, they sort of talked like, hey, this is what EMM is, sort of introducing AirWatch to a wider audience. And so one of the questions this year is going to be like, how much AirWatch is there going to be at VMworld? And remember, they're still doing a separate AirWatch conference in the middle of September in Atlanta that I'll be down covering. So
is that a successful event on its own, or why do you think they haven't combined them?
It's pretty huge. It's not like, so by huge, I mean, it's, I don't know, there were maybe 700 or 800 people there last year.
Sounds huge to me. Yeah. I mean, it's not VMworld, but and probably
a good like 50 vendors, tons of people. Like, you
want to
talk. That
audience has been pretty nuanced. Like, that audience has been cultivated over a while, and to fold that into VMworld just kind of anonymizes those 800 people and 50 vendors in the whole mix of VMworld. So as long as it can sustain itself, I guess it makes sense to keep it on its own.
Yeah. You want to have all 800 of those people in a place where they can walk around without having to bump into, you know, all the storage vendors.
It's like us at Thriveform versus VMworld.
Yeah, yeah.
We just want a desktop bulk event.
But what we can look at is, I was going to say, think back to VMware had that their last like mobility and AirWatch event in the middle of June. Do you guys remember this? It's where VMware announced VMware Identity Manager, and they talked about a few other mobile initiatives.
Mm-hmm. I didn't attend it, but I remember it happening.
Right. So that was then. Right.
So they announced that stuff then. So did they just announce it, or did they release it? Are you looking forward to the release of it coming up at VMworld?
I think part of this has been released. Let me check on that.
That's
well,
all right.
There's a lot. I mean, VMworld for me, and this can kind of tie back into our conversations about VMware versus Citrix, and we have to have this whole Elliott conversation as part of that. I'm really looking forward to VMworld because, you know, the Horizon 6, which was big because of the RDSH and app publishing, additions, that was announced, or that was released a year and a half ago. And they've been just like adding to it. I think might have Simon Bramfitt posted a comment on the article I did, and I rarely agree with stuff that Simon writes, but he basically said, hey, this is easy for VMware because all they have to do is like look at all the, you know, they have to keep on adding all of the checkboxes of functionality.
Hey, can you do that? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and it's basically like Citrix already created the list of like VMware's, you know, to-do list is basically like, you know, Citrix. And Citrix has to like keep on thinking up like more wild features, whereas VMware just has to be like, hey, we need to add this, we need to add this, we need to add this. And, you know, I think it's the same thing. Like the architecture of Zen App, Zen Desktop today is still very much like a 1990s mentality, and that's not bad. It's just a product has existed since then. It's just been slowly upgraded over all the years, but it's still based on software you download and install and all this kind of stuff. And so Citrix has that in their core sort of Zen App, Zen Desktop products. And then there's also the Citrix Workspace Cloud, where it's trying to sort of like cloud enable that. And it's maybe sort of like a different layer they kind of hook into, where I imagine VMware is going to kind of jump right into like, there's no VMware equivalent of like sort of Citrix Workspace Cloud, because VMware stuff just like does that inherently, and that's just sort of more because it's being architected kind of from scratch in,
well, that's Enzo,
you know, 2015.
Like, Enzo, yeah. Is, yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see how that works out. I sat down the other day though and tried to write an article for Search Virtual Desktop about what I'm looking for at VMworld, and I couldn't really come up with anything besides the same old stuff. And so I was looking forward to hearing what you had to say, and you're like, yeah, it's the same two things.
Well, okay, so
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say I was looking over my notes from that VMware event in in June, and it was that the workspace portal essentially was becoming much more mobile aware. It's the big thing that I was excited about at Synergy was that the Works Home, the MDM agent, and Citrix Receiver were being merged into into one thing, and we're not into just like one single application, and we're not quite at that point yet with VMware, but the whole like VMware workspace portal with the new VMware Identity Manager is now much more AirWatch aware. So we're moving right along on that converged, managed mobile, managed desktop applications, managed virtual desktops together type vision.
Yeah, so where they're not like merging them into one product, but kind of merging into a a suite where they sort of all work together.
Right.
To me, the VMworld thing, it's the focus is on them because it's their time to shine. And it goes back to what I said, Citrix was this monopoly in the space for pushing 20 years. And VMworld entering the space was a big moment because that just established, like, there was instantly credibility for an alternative to Citrix. And even though the feature parity is not there, and it's just like this is the first like big time kind of credible vendor, because all these Citrix customers sort of already have are VMware customers as well, at least at the infrastructure level. And VMware has respect of like the C-level execs. They get the respect of the industry. Like they're a huge company. Like it's we talk about V Workspace from Dell being a good solid product, which I believe, but it's just like Dell's not, whether it's they're focused or whether it's just because they're trying to not piss off Citrix or VMware, like for whatever reason, like it's just like V Workspace doesn't really come up, and like there's a lot of Citrix customers who for years V Workspace has existed in one form or another, and that didn't really affect what they were doing, but what these customers were doing. And I kind of feel like now that VMware enters the space, people are like, oh wow, that's interesting. If for nothing else, like I'm price pressured at Citrix, because you've got, Citrix who's been able to charge whatever they've been able to charge for years and years and years. And even if customers like the fact that, Ericom and VWorkspace existed, I don't think Citrix was discounting much because they really thought someone was going to like rip out XenApp and go to Ericom.
Companies have sort of gotten used to it too. I had lunch with a consultant in town, last week or 2 weeks ago. And, I was asking him, I'm like, all right, so who of all your customers, who buys Platinum? And he's like, all of them. I'm like, really? I said, because I hear from other people about how Platinum doesn't have enough value. And he goes, yeah, he goes, they just buy Platinum because they don't want to have to ask the question of whether or not they're entitled to something. So they just buy Platinum. So whatever that is, $550 a user, $600 a user, something like that, whatever that is, they're happy to pay for that. And VMware probably looks at that and goes, yeah, we could probably get six. Even if we got 400, that'd be okay. It was like when Dell got into ink,
for printers.
Yeah, printer ink, right? Because they looked at the margins that HP was getting, and they just were like, ha, ha, "Okay, so we can still get in and make like 600%, sell for half the price."
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because Horizon 6, of course, like so many Citrix customers of Xenops and Desktop are on vSphere anyway, and so they're paying for that separately from their XenApps and desktop licenses. And so now with VMware, their Horizon 6 suite is significantly less cost, sticker price, than XenApps and desktop. And on top of that, you also get the hypervisor you're going to use with it. Whereas with Citrix, obviously if you use Zen Server and Hyper-V, it's essentially sort of like air quotes free. So I think that's something that VMware's pricing, remember, like it's not just the price of Horizon 6 versus Xenops on desktop. It's a price of it's a price of Horizon 6 versus the price of Xenops on desktop and vSphere for desktops. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if for anything else, I mean, like Citrix is, I think when these renewals are coming up, they're not going to be able to charge what they've been charging, you know, for their sort of renewals. And my article where I made this prediction for 2016, you know, I said neck and neck, and you know the questions were, well, do you mean in terms of like net new business or in terms of existing install base? And I was kind of thinking, and I didn't really specify there. I guess I didn't honestly know exactly. I didn't think it through really, but like, I mean, I think in net, because we're seeing this, like, I mean, net new business, I'll say for sure, like customers, like new customers who are buying stuff in 2016, I think it's gonna be 50-50 between Citrix and VMware. And Citrix has like a huge install base, and I recognize that even if they want to move off Citrix, like it's just a very, very tough move to get off of Citrix and you know, all that.
Well, but that's so, but that's not new customers. That's a different thing altogether.
That's my point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I, but like it's just, you know, we're already seeing, and like, you know, I talked about this in the article. You know, just in going to Brian Forum, talking to people, and going to like the VDI shows and talking to people. And in going to just like all the Tech Target survey data that we, for those listening, we like Gabe and Jack and I don't do that, but Tech Target does. We have access to all that data. I mean, obviously, you know, Citrix install base is still like massively like 90%+. But what people are talking like, if you look at people who are considering VMware, that's almost everybody. Like when your next version is going to be Xenap 8. Zen Desktop 8, 9, whatever it is, it's cloud, you know, whatever is next, when we get to the point, and it's just that, you know, everyone was so focused on getting to Windows 7, and, like, we've gotten there, and now they're sort of catching their breath, and it's, okay, like, what's the next big upgrade? We're going to be going to Windows 10, and I think as we're starting to rethink our architectures and how all the products go and, like, what version of products we're doing, now VMware is going to be, like, a legitimate consideration for customers.
Yeah, and those people are still loyal to, like, if they're a Citrix customer, most of them are still loyal to Citrix, maybe not in spirit, but like just because they've been so dependent on them for so long. And considering VMware is just due diligence, right? Like they know that there is a viable competitor now.
Yeah.
And they want to explore just how viable they are.
And if VMware does it right, because here we're talking about checkboxes, like all that, like a lot of conversation on the article was around feature lists and feature level parity, and like certainly that's important. And VMware knows they've got a gap, and they've been, you know, slowly related. They've released two or three updates to Horizon 6 over the past, you know, 18 months, just added more features here and there. But like the feature parity is only part of the conversation, because like the big conversation is like, what's VMware's vision for how all this works? And that's kind of taken into consideration some stuff that Jack was talking about in the mobility stuff. It's like how it plugs into, you know, like not just delivering apps and desktops, but like, well, like delivering apps and, you know, the cloud enablement of it, the, what's the thing where you put VMs on the, like how they work with traditional desktops, how it works with, you know, identity and management. You talked about Jack, how it works with, you know, profile user management. Like the whole vision for how that comes together, I think that is going to be as much of a selling point as the specific like feature checkboxes of like what your RDSH server has versus what their RDSH server has. And that to me is what I'm really interested in, because if VMware, like VMware has been very good at vision and then executing their vision. Like you talk about, like they talked about like sort of software defined data centers and all this stuff, you know, years ago, and now pretty much everyone is doing that. And, you know, so like if they kind of can take that sort of proper vision and apply it to the stuff that's in our space, I think that's going to be really, really powerful.
I miss Citrix having a European show in the fall that came after VMworld, because that made for some interesting tit for tat,
like rebuttal
battles. Yeah,
yeah.
Because now we're gonna have to wait until May to see what Citrix says. I mean, like on a big stage. There's a lot of stuff that VMware can say they do, and it's still maybe not as advanced as what, or mature, I guess I should say, is what Citrix is doing. Because even if they do add some of those features are, you know, something that Citrix has been honing for years and years, and VMware just added to their product yesterday. So even if the feature line item comparison is the same or is closer to being the same between the two products, it doesn't necessarily mean that Horizon 6 is equal to XenApp, for example.
But like I'm saying, but these are like.
But I want to see that. Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
And these are points. These are just points in the overall kind of solution, in the overall vision. Like the vision includes all these components, and so yeah, the components have to be there. But it's gonna be like who can package all this together in a vision that you want to buy into. Like I'm telling you, man, watch Citrix's keynote from Synergy. 2.5 hours. Go watch that video. Let's do that. Not right now, but like what I'm saying is like let's wait. Like
Mystery Science 3000 style.
We should listen. Like seriously, like watch Citrix's Synergy keynote from May. Watch VMware's keynote, or maybe it's like their Sanjay's keynote, like the day two keynote about their vision. And tell me which company you want to bet your career on. Tell me which company you think is going to lead you to the future, because you watch Citrix's keynotes and it's like the first 5 minutes was like, oh yeah, we screwed up here. We're unscrewing up by extending our old product. Then the next hour was about how you can blink the lights when you walk in with your phone, which is fun science, but like that's my job is like keep my boss happy with his iPad. Like just watch Citrix's vision and watch VMware's vision. You tell me which company you think you want to lead you to, like, you know, the next 5 years of end-user computing.
And all VMware has to do, though, is say the same stuff that Citrix has been saying for years, and it sounds really unique coming from them. You know, like, this is a desktop is a desktop is a desktop. A desktop is a file. We don't care about desktops.
Bad before that.
Yeah, they were so anti that. Just to see VMware coming around that's tweet-worthy, right? Yeah.
Remember,
Citrix is just left on the same stump they've been on for a long time. Like, yeah, we know that's what we're doing, guys.
Like two years ago when we were writing articles, like, is VMware going to spin off EUC?
I know, right? So,
yeah. I'm glad they didn't.
I couldn't find that article, but I wanted to post it in a comment to my article about the whole Citrix and Elliott thing, because literally, we've had the conversation right now. We're having the conversation about what is core to Citrix. And we've had that conversation about VMware 2 years ago. So I think it's funny how we're doing the same thing for Citrix now. But you're absolutely right. If you can find that article, Jack, let me know. Because I couldn't remember the title.
Now, granted, Citrix Workspace Cloud, Citrix has been doing good stuff there. And talking to customers who use Citrix Workspace Cloud, they talked about Citrix, the company that is building Workspace Cloud is not the same company that builds ZenApp and Zen Desktop. Like the people who are using Workspace Cloud talk about, you know, I've got, I'm using it this, this, and this. I want these features. And like a week later, they got new versions and features are out there. And like they're executing like so quickly on that. And now I don't know if that's just because it's not released yet and they're able to do that kind of stuff, or if that sort of level of execution will continue. So I'm not saying that like all is lost for Citrix, but I'm just saying like that.
I bet customers 18 months into WinFrame got their features pretty quick too.
But so then like I said, the reality is like Citrix, it's a train wreck right now, and they're losing people left and right. I mean, you know, Mark was fired. Like, call it what you want, he was fired by Elliott. You know, Elliott got the board seat, and they got rid of a couple other. There's a couple of directors that are they're going out, and they're getting joint ones in, and Mark's out as CEO. Or on his way out as CEO, and it's then you've got the whole like Citrix is still struggling with getting customers to ZenApp 7, and it's just the buzz and the momentum, we kind of have like the perfect storm, if that's the not too overused, of VMware's entering the space. Okay, they got to execute, but they've shown they're doing good so far. 18 months on Horizon 6, 18 months ago versus Horizon 6 now. They're hiring the right people. They're saying the right things. They're moving. They're doing cool integration stuff like you're mentioning, Jack, with AirWatch, with all our sort of services stuff. They're saying the right stuff. They have a lot of, they're giving Citrix price pressure. They've got a lot of they've got a lot of respect in the industry and in terms of like IT. Like the C-level executives like VMware, and they run their businesses on VMware and everything. So like they're doing everything right, and then meanwhile, like Citrix is sort of like, I don't want to say imploding. Like, you know, Citrix is a multi-billion-dollar company; they're not going anywhere. But I mean, it's Citrix is going through major changes, and the Citrix that comes out of this Elliott thing is going to be a different Citrix than went into it, and it will be a better Citrix. But in the meantime, it's kind of like tumultuous. And in the meantime, you've got VMware doing everything right, and this is making for very interesting times. And you know, and that all of that sort of led me to you know, that article. And my point for saying that, frankly, was 2016 is by 2017, a year and a half from now, is that this is, you know, this isn't happening like overnight. Like, I'm talking about a year and a half from now. But this, I mean, you know, momentum of VMware is good. Momentum of Citrix is less good. And that's making things interesting for us.
Well, and that's why Elliott got involved.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a momentum thing. I mean, in the article that I wrote that, you know, Citrix used to be the undisputed leader in just about everything EUC, right? Especially when it comes to, you know, remote desktop or RDSH and VDI. And now can you tell me anything that Citrix is the undisputed leader in anymore? And the answer is no. I mean, there's a lot of fans still, but they don't have a clear cut advantage over anything, over anybody anymore. And you have to pause and think. You used to be able to say, oh, it's Citrix for sure. And now you have to pause and think about it and be like, well, VMware is making these inroads and they're doing this and that, and they're doing everything right, like you just said. And so, yeah, no, they're not the undisputed leader anymore. And, you know, anybody that was invested in Citrix is probably not happy about that.
Well, and think about this. So Elliott's going to put in a CEO who is an operations guy or girl who is like someone. They're going to put in someone who's focused on operations, focused on cost, you know, cost cutting, making things more efficient, making the sales force more efficient, like cutting rid of the products that are not core, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's going to be operational focused. Meanwhile, this is all happening while Citrix's pricing is going to be driven down because of the pressure from VMworld. We had this whole kind of talk about, you know, what is the future, what is all this kind of stuff. And then, by the way, half of Citrix products now competing against Microsoft. And so, you know, this whole, like, better together kind of thing, that where Citrix and Microsoft is kind of arm in arm, like, you know, that's kind of, like, Zen Server competes against Hyper-V, ShareFile competes against lots of other things, like, Microsoft is in the EMM space. Like, a lot of things, like, the Citrix core products that don't compete against Microsoft is still just a core Zen app, Zen desktop that is going to have major competition pressure and major price pressure. And Citrix trying to right their ship and just cut and make things operationally efficient at the exact time that we need the, like, you know, Citrix needs to be operationally efficient, but also needs to show customers that what they have is the best. And to Gabe's point, and they're not the undisputed leader at that anymore.
But it, you know, isn't what they're, like, all the workspace cloud stuff that, you know, that we talked about, that they talked about at Synergy, like, if they execute that really on that really well, with under the leadership of a new, very operationally focused CEO, if they execute on that very well, like, won't that be impressive enough?
I don't know.
Because it also depends. At the same time as that's happening, VMware is still catching up. So this is where I feel like Citrix, whoever takes over, and frankly, in the meantime, Citrix has to make sure that they're still, they need to focus on those core things now, and they need to focus on Zen Apps and Desktop and Workspace Services and whatever else is deemed to be worthy of core. They need to focus on that and innovate in that area now. Not just wait until the new CEO gets there. Wait until the 1 year moratorium is up and Elliott can have more influence and all of that. Like, that stuff has to happen today, and it's got to continue to happen. So they can't get lost in refocusing and stop doing new things.
I mean, if you were Citrix, if you were Citrix while you were doing that operational efficiency stuff, and I realized, like, the oxymoron of you can't prioritize two things at once, you know, by definition, one has to be a priority. But if you were Citrix, like, vision-wise, what else would you do, or what else would you do differently?
Here's a, okay, there's a couple of things. All the operational efficient stuff, yeah, that's there. Spinoff, you know, the go-to businesses is being evaluated. You know, that's codename for sale. The
Byte Mobile's already Byte for Mobile, sale. Yeah, they got, you know, cloud.com stuff. They got to figure out if there's any value and what they're going to do with
that. Yeah. So there's all that. A couple things. So someone I talked to earlier this week, like, first of all, I share file is a great example. Share file, by the way, is in the magic quadrant now, or the proper, you know, quadrant, like, whatever. So, like, good for them. But I just cannot understand, like what this guy who I talked to said is, for every dollar Citrix invests in ShareFile, they need to spend an equal dollar making their stuff work as well with the other enterprise file sync and share. Because right now, to get the real kind of value of the whole Citrix package, you have to use ShareFile, and if you're using, you know, OneDrive, Box, Dropbox, you know, etc., then you don't get, like, sort of class one or tier one level, like, integration between the two. The same can be said about, you know, Zen Mobile. For every dollar they spend integrating, so I'm not saying they shouldn't build Zen Mobile. I'm not saying they shouldn't integrate Zen Mobile with Zen Apps and Desktop. But every dollar they spend building Zen Mobile, they should spend another dollar making sure that Zen Apps and Desktop integrate in these cool ways with all the other EMM products out there. For every dollar they spend on NetScaler, and, you know, I was definitely, like, in agreement with Elliot on their letter saying that, like, NetScaler didn't need to be at Citrix, but to Gabe's response and many other people's responses, like, well, regardless, they did spend 5 years, like, really integrating NetScaler with Zen Apps and Desktop, so you can't just get rid of that. Fine, you still have NetScaler. For every dollar you spend developing NetScaler, you got to spend a dollar, or every dollar you spend, like, integrating, I should say it like this, for every dollar you spend integrating Zen Apps and Desktop with NetScaler, you got to spend an equal dollar integrating that with all our third-party, you know, application delivery controllers out there. Because part of what made Zen Apps and Desktop good was it was the best at what it does. And I think that's probably still true today. And Gabe, you talk about the undisputed leader. Like,
I think it's probably true. Right. And I agree with you. I asked that guy that I had lunch with a couple of weeks ago, I asked him, I said, so, you know, if somebody comes up and asks you which one of these is better, he's like, oh, it's Citrix. But it's not undisputed anymore. That's the best way I can put it.
And the way I'm saying this is
always hesitation.
If you are using Zen Apps and Desktop today and you want, like, I'll call it, again, like, tier one level integration with, I'm using enterprise file sync and share, I'm using application delivery controllers, I'm using EMM as three examples. There's probably more of these. But if you want tier one integration with your desktop and app delivery platform with an ADC, EMM, and EFSS.
nice.
Then you have to use Citrix's products. And Citrix is for sure not the undisputed leader in any of those three markets. And so if you want, you know, your leader in Zen Desktop, Zen App to have tier one integration, you have to use it with these second-rate products. And if Citrix, so in terms of priority, if Citrix could take and say, hey, we have this Zen Mobile thing. We like Zen Mobile. If you want to use Zen Mobile, we're going to bundle it, we're going to sell it. But if you want to use Mobile Iron instead, we will deliver the same fantastic tier one experience of integration on your mobile devices, your app, your clients, whatever, regardless of whether you use our EMM or someone else's EMM. And they need to have that same conversation with enterprise file sync and share. They need to have that same conversation with application delivery controllers. And because this is the way the world is moving. Like, the whole, like, monolithic suite that has all the stuff and integrates in all these proprietary ways, like, that's not what people want. People want – and the whole, like, kind of cloud
that's,
architecture.
That's IBM.
That's IBM. That's IBM of the 90s. That's Cisco of the 90s. That's Symantec of the 90s. That's CA of the 90s. Like, what people want is to pick the best of breed, and then be able to hook them together in very great ways. Like, look what Splunk
called, that's how it worked before NetScaler. Now, we didn't have the application.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff, that's how Citrix worked before NetScaler.
Absolutely.
Remember Packetier?
Absolutely, you know, so. Absolutely. And you know, it works that way in other ways. Like, you know, Splunk like some of Citrix's monitoring and reporting stuff, that information, the way that they, you know, other products are able to get in. So if you want to have like just some database that tells you like what's up and down, you can deal with Windows or Citrix by itself. But if you want to go nuts, you can have Splunk and hook it in. And it's amazing. And it's working out really well. And like, let Splunk go out and sell you on why their monitoring is best and go to their like do all that kind of stuff. But Citrix right now does not have that. And like I said, I'm beating the drum on EMM, EFSS, and ADCs, but like that's what they need to do, is they need to put some serious dollars into making their products, their core best of products, Xenops and Desktop, work in tier one ways with their competitors.
They need to think more like Mobile Iron.
Yeah. And my problem is, you know, you got Elliot coming in, who's going to be cost-focused, cost-crunch, operational focus, you know, new CEO, like focus on like riding the ship and getting the sales organization and all that kind of stuff. And is that person going to have the chutzpah to say, yeah, we got to put, you know, $100 million into making our products so they can better work with our competition? And you know who is going to do that? It's VMware. Because everything VMware is doing, everything that they've done, like, yes, they're making point products and they're making stuff, you know, like they're trying to add more features and all this kind of stuff. That's all fine. But VMware has done a very good job of making it of you know, having their stuff opened up, at least at the data center infrastructure level, and being able to hook in with kind of whatever is best. Now, I say that ironically, PCORP is a closed protocol and only works with, you know, whatever that one F5 thing is or whatever. But so, but my point is like that's what Citrix is going to have to do. So to your question, Jack, like if I'm, you know, new CEO of Citrix, don't spin up NetScaler. Don't spin off ShareFile. Don't stop making ShareFile. Don't stop making Citrix, you know, Zen Mobile. Don't stop those things. But I want to put some serious dollars in getting tier one integration with the two products that actually matter, and I am currently possibly the undisputed leader on, and making sure that keeps them rolling forward.
I would love to find out more about ShareFile and how what that adoption rate is, because if you're using Zen Mobile, you're pretty much bound to ShareFile, right? So, and maybe that's not true. But if that's the case, wouldn't it make sense to make Zen Mobile more, make it plug in, make it work with the other providers out there instead of just locking you into ShareFile?
That's kind
of my whole
point.
Then you're buying into that whole block.
Well, there's
exactly.
Senders in the Sendrars, Sendra, I can't say your name, but customers want customization. Look at Okta, outstanding platform for identity management.
Yeah, that
customers
does,
want options, vendors want a monolithic stack. and so that's thing one that I'm doing if I'm Citrix's CEO. Thing two is you gotta figure out your relationship with Microsoft, because like I said, Citrix for the longest time was like embrace and extend, whatever you call it. You know, Microsoft built the base product, Citrix like made it fancier, and that was a fantastic business model for them, made them a $1 billion company in 15 years, whatever. That's fine. But now, you know, like I said, it's unclear. Like, you know, to a person who said earlier, like, hey, does this Windows 10 universal apps, whatever, mean we don't need RDSH? Or I think it means that. Like, these are the questions people are having. Microsoft has their vision around Windows 10, the future of desktops, the future of desktop applications. Microsoft is doing EMM. Microsoft is doing enterprise file sync and share. Microsoft is doing virtual data center platforms. Microsoft is doing all of these things that now Citrix is doing. If Citrix is going to go reinvest in these, making their stuff work with other products, and they could work with Microsoft products, maybe that would be the way to do it. But it's like the whole adage about no one ever got fired for buying IBM. Like, no one ever got fired for buying Citrix in, you know, 2004. And because Microsoft and Citrix would tell you things are crazy. Here's the vision. Here's the best way to do it. Here's where we're going with desktops. Here's where we're going with applications. And here's how we can deliver it to you together. But now you can't really get that, because Citrix is saying this, and I got, you know, my two good products, and I got 15 mediocre products, and these 15 mediocre products compete against Microsoft. And it's like, well, do I go the Microsoft way? Do I go the Citrix way? And Microsoft doesn't give a hoot about Citrix. Microsoft is focused on, you know, VMware and like Amazon and all these companies. Maybe Google and stuff. Like, so I just feel like Citrix re-embracing, re-engaging with Microsoft and having like a meaningful, like real story to tell about, like, look, if you continue as a customer, if you continue to invest and believe in Citrix, we will work with Microsoft to make sure that you're taken care of and we give you the best experience that won't get you fired. And I don't know that I have that, because when I read about Citrix's products, there's a lot of products that Microsoft is competing against them on, and I'm reading a lot of marketing materials to talk about why Microsoft is better than Citrix. And so now I'm confused about, why am I buying Citrix, especially if I'm using VMware as my hypervisor? They just have to fix that with Microsoft and have a good story and present that to market. So that's what I'm doing.
That's why there was some excitement when Mark T retired last time. One of the first names that popped up was Brad Anderson to replace him, from Microsoft. So and that would have been cool, because that would have solidified that relationship. And I'm sure that's not in the cards anymore, but that would have answered the Microsoft relationship question.
Yeah. So. Anyway, we're over time. We can keep talking, though. But I don't know what you guys have other things to add to Citrix. Like, those are my main things. And that's going back to, like I said, like, that all of that is why, this VMworld, I'm excited about it. I'm really, really looking forward to what VMware is going to say, because I do really believe that the quarterly numbers it's hard because all the companies kind of obscure how they report on things. But, VMware's not yet making a dent in deployed seats, but they're making a dent in the perception of the industry of, like, who has their acts together. And so it's going to be really, really interesting VMworld.
Yeah, we'll see how we come away. I feel like every VMworld I come away thinking, man, VMware really has their act together. And in the past, not the last few years, but prior to that, there was this this war going on, right, between Citrix and VMware, where they'd all promise something and then they would not deliver the next year or by the next year. And I feel like that sort of thing has gone away. I think that both companies have been delivering, and I feel like VMware is probably more guilty of that than Citrix, but not by much. And I feel like both companies have been delivering on what they've been talking about at their shows. And so I'm looking forward to that, because it was tough to be like, okay, I'm here. Where's my client hypervisor? and have it not be there. But I have confidence that we will actually see the things that we want to see and be able to touch them at VMworld.
No one here, thankfully, is asking for client hypervisors.
Oh, I know. But that was I was trying to think of examples.
Yeah. there's a lot more to talk about, but I guess we can just pick this up next week.
We can, and there will be a lot to talk about at our VMworld podcast, I'm sure, as well.
So VMworld is a week after next, right? So we got one more podcast. We got a week.
When do I leave? I leave a week from Saturday.
We'll do a regular podcast. I was talking to Kevin. I think we'll get Kevin on next week, Kevin Goodman. Continuing just having kind of like random guests on the show.
A former VMware person who, if you ask him how things work now, he says he doesn't know, because everything has changed so much since when he was there, which is kind of cool. Like that's the change that we've all been talking about now, is all this stuff that VMware is doing on their desktop side. Those people weren't in place when Kevin worked there. So that's cool. Yeah, I'll be around for that. I'm going to be in Toronto if anybody happens to listen to this before tomorrow morning or Thursday morning. So I will be speaking, doing a VDI roadshow, state of the industry type thing in Toronto. And you can learn more about that if you want to go at events.techtarget.com. Are you guys done speaking? You spoke last week in New York, right? Jack, do you have anything coming up?
Yep.
I am in New York in September, and Toronto in October, and Dallas in December.
Oh, so they get it right for you. I don't know what it is for me. When they schedule shows for me, I get Tampa in June and Boston in February. And they need to switch that. Yeah, at least so you get Dallas in at a good time of year.
I'm looking at my schedule. I'm in Chicago. Who's got there's Minneapolis and Boston's on the list too. I don't actually know who's got each of those shows.
I think you have Minneapolis and I have Boston.
Minneapolis, I guess October, maybe not too bad.
Anyway. Minneapolis is great. Yeah, it might be me too. I don't know.
There's a lot more to talk about. There's a lot of great comments here, and so I'm going to go through that and like pull out talking points so we can use for next week's show.
Oh no, Minneapolis too. What do you know? You're done after Chicago, man.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks for that. So I don't know. I guess I've had a couple little mini rants today. Thank you for that, guys. Jack, final thoughts?
That's it for now.
All right. This is good because a lot of stuff, by the way, to those listening, like we don't pre-plan. I mean, clearly, anything we're talking about here, and a lot of this kind of stuff is the same sorts of conversations that the three of us would have when we're just talking on our regular kind of team calls. And it's kind of fun just to have these out, you know, in public. The comment about when I'll be in Chicago, I think it's like October 15th.
Yeah, I had to opt out of that one because that's my 10th anniversary, 10th wedding anniversary. So that you had to do that one because of that.
So I'll be there on October 15th. That's a Thursday, I believe. That's also the weekend of the Chicago Pinball Expo. And some of you know that Gabe and I are into pinball as our hobbies. So so if you are in the Chicago area, you should come by. It's up, where is it, like Wheeling or something like that? Like an hour north of the city.
Yeah, and it's a ways.
You pay like... I'm making this number up. You pay like $20 to get in, and there's like 400 pinball machines. They're all set to free play, and you can just like, you know, it's like Bryform but for pinball. So there's like breakout sessions, and they have like vendor booths that sell like parts and T-shirts and stuff, and like hundreds of pinball machines that are like set in free play. So I will be there. Gabe, I guess you'll be there like after your anniversary. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah. So I think I will be. So the. I think the tolls cost more money to get there than the actual admission to this thing.
Yeah, it's right. It's the difference between like pinball conferences and IT conferences is that, you know, the ticket to get in a pinball conference is like $20 or $50 or something like that. Booth rental is like $300 instead of, you know, $20,000.
Yeah, their goal is to break even on a $100,000 budget.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to say one thing real quick, too, is that we're not I don't want to come off like a rooting against anybody. You know, like we talk about Citrix sort of in a negative light. And obviously we've talked about VMware in a negative light, too, in the past. And we're not rooting against anyone. We want everybody to be successful. And we've got obviously we've been dealing with Citrix for a long time. But just in no way are we trying to be negative here. It's just kind of it is what it is. This is the state of the industry right now. And so this is what has to happen to get it all back to normal. I just want to be clear. I don't want to be called a hater, you know? I wrote it so carefully not to be called a hater, and I was so dreading checking out the comments the next day, and every one of them was so positive. I was so happy. It was such a big relief for me because, I mean, let's be honest. History shows that the comments for that article were probably going to be, you just love VMware so much and you hate Citrix. we've had so many of those in the past. So I just want to make it abundantly clear, you know, I'm rooting for everybody.
Well, I'm not. And, but in this case, Citrix, yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't want things to be like back to how they were because Citrix was a monopoly and they, you know, now it's not. So I think that's awesome.
That's what I mean. I want innovation. I want no frustration. I want everything just to be awesome. And it's
oh
not.
My gosh,
it should be.
We're gonna use that as our theme song for next week.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
only for 30 seconds.
29 seconds. it's you know, look, Citrix is not gonna be the same company in a year that they are now.
That's a
true
story.
That's not a bad thing. So I don't know. We talk about this a lot. I'm only 37 years old. I've got 30-ish years left. Like I passed my 20-year anniversary. I talk about this all the time. I'm not even halfway point. So, you know, there's enterprise IT is not going away. Microsoft Windows desktops are not going away. Citrix and VMware are not going away. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in this space, and I'm excited to be able to sort of be a watcher. And, you know, I'm up on one vendor and down on another, and it switches and – that's nice when, like, I don't actually have any skin in the game. I don't have to make a $1 million enterprise purchase of any of these products. So I'm free to flip-flop with the wind.
Man, I can't imagine another 30 years. I'm sitting here. I'm literally looking at an 8-inch floppy disk right now that has 240 bytes or 256 bytes of capacity on it. And I'm thinking, holy shit, what's another 30 years going to be?
That's funny. You can probably write... you can like write on a piece of paper more data that disk would hold.
Probably. It has backup controller firmware for an IBM something or other system. It still has the label on it and stuff. I have no idea how I got it, but it's cool.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, to all who chatted with us, thank you so much. These were awesome comments. And I'm just reading that. What about the word?
God, I wish we could save these comments off. I don't know if we can.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, Justin, that's your project for today. See if we can, like, figure out how to save these comments and tack them onto the article somehow. Anyway, so yeah, we're going to hang up. Thank you all for listening. Thanks, Gabe and Jack. Thanks, Justin, our engineer, Mariah, our project manager. And we'll all see you next week. And then we'll see you in 2 weeks at VMworld. So thank you so much.
See ya.